There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 16 days into the month of December. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, we have an episode of Deconstruction 101 from the Pine River Group. This episode is on the social construction of disability. All that and more, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT.
Red alert. The spread of COVID-19 is at a critical level in your area or a neighboring region. Getting together with family or friends is prohibited, and traveling to other regions is not recommended. More targeted restrictions have been put into place to limit the spread and prevent a lockdown. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Continue to wash your hands, keep a 2-meter distance, and wear a mask when physical distancing is impossible. We need to act now. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Thank you.
Welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to On Possession by CEO Lena. Up next is an episode of Deconstruction 101 on the topic of the social construction of ability and disability.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Decon 101. Today, I am your host, Emily Danko.
I'm Monica Elvin.
And I'm Michaela Brown. And of course, we are joined by the phenomenal Candace Hopkins as our producer extraordinaire and phenomenal researcher.
Absolutely. And we do apologize if while one person is talking and teaching and taking their part, if the other people do sound a little weird or muddled. We were experiencing some technical difficulties today. But I do hope that all of you get as much out of it as we do, and we'll try and make the recording as high quality as possible for the person who is speaking and teaching at this time. With that in mind, we're going to go ahead and jump into our next topic, which is disability. I'm really excited to talk about this topic because I learned a lot as a result of my historical research. But I do want to kind of give you all, as our listeners, a heads up. This is a very difficult topic, and there's definitely a lot of negative history of people with disabilities being persecuted, prosecuted, excluded from history. And so we do acknowledge that this may be a really difficult topic for people to listen to this week. So just to make sure that you all have kind of that like mental preparation, because I know sometimes I need to have that kind of a warning before I listen to difficult topics. But to center ourselves today, what we're going to talk about first is really our own kind of realization of people who are different from us in terms of ability. Really, as a elementary school student, I went to a school that didn't have a lot of students with disabilities, because a lot of times in elementary schools, especially coming from a teaching perspective, there may not be enough resources at every single school to serve students with disabilities. And so a lot of times at younger grades, you have one school where those resources are concentrated. You know, and so for me, I don't think that I really experienced, like, at least at school, learning alongside people with disabilities until like high school. And it was really only through my church that I had a lot of exposure to people who were different from me. And so it was when I was, I think, middle school, a friend of mine has a younger brother with Down syndrome. And that was really my realization that, oh my gosh, you know, people have differences, but it doesn't mean that they're, you know, scary or, you know, other. It just means that they're a little different and, you know, they need some different things in order to be successful. And that was really, I think, important in my realization for what it's like to work alongside and learn alongside people with disabilities. So that's my experience. What about you, Monica? I'll go ahead and you can buzz in.
Thanks, Emily. So yes, I honestly was trying to think about the first time that I ever thought about disability as an able-bodied person by standard medical definitions. And the first thing that came to mind was a student in one of my classes in middle school. His name was Sam, and he had autism, and he would take several classes in the regular classes in addition to his classes that he would take in a separate classroom. And I remember that he got a lot of backlash from my fellow students, a lot of people who thought he shouldn't be in our class, and he used to have some pretty intense episodes, I guess you would say, and he was pretty brutally made fun of. And I think why this sticks with me so much is because after a particularly tough day in class where he had a pretty explosive episode and had to leave, because the class was being so loud. I think we had a substitute that day, and you know what happens when there's a substitute, everybody just kind of goes free for all. And so then his aide actually came back in after bringing Sam to a different classroom to talk to us and explain why we were such terrible people. No, but kind of. He explained to us that for Sam, it's basically like he hears, smells, sees everything all at the same time. It's all happening at once, and he can't shut any one sense out. And so when it's this noisy classroom filled with people and people moving around and shouting and all these scents, you know, you're all going through puberty. There's all kind of stuff going on, but it's just this overwhelming experience. And it was pretty impactful for me, and I know for a lot of my peers in that class that day. And I think that was the first time that I ever had to think outside of myself as to how, you know, somebody else perceives the world. But that's my pretty traumatic experience. So I'll go ahead and buzz Michaela in now so that she can share her side of things as well.
Thank you, Monica and Emily, for sharing your experiences. I think, man, I just really appreciate this question of when did you first experience or notice how disability shows up in space or in how you witness folks with disabilities treated. And I would have to say some of my earliest memories of folks that were differently abled was in media, quite honestly, and thinking of some of the movies that come to mind, you know, when we think of movies with portrayals of folks with disabilities in them. So, you know, thinking about Rain Man, thinking of Forrest Gump. And I remember at a very young age being so overwhelmed with emotions around how human beings had the capacity to mistreat another human being. And just being so terribly upset. And I think, you know, Emily, you shared that this content is enraging and emotional when we talk about the social construction of disability, because I think it speaks to the human capacity to other and cause extreme trauma to our fellow humans. And so again, like some of my earliest memories are just like watching films that have characters that are different, but how society responds to them in a really disgusting kind of way, and yet at the same time being so enchanted, I don't know what the word is, by not the resiliency, but just like the beauty of human diversity. Interestingly enough, most of my early experiences in elementary school, I did go to a school that had several students with varying levels of disability, you know, neurodivergent, physical disabilities. And I remember having a friend, his name was Bruce, who was autistic. And he was the most magical person to me. He had the amazing gift of being able to know your birthday. You tell him your birthday, and he could tell you every single movie that was produced, released in that year. And I just, like, this, he was magical, and just so much love and beauty I, you know, saw for folks that were oftentimes categorized as other and was so confused by that mistreatment. Because I think at an early age, I was just really thought the way they saw the world, some of the folks that I interacted with, my fellow children, interacted with the world, was so different and so beautiful and so fun. And I wanted to, like, know more. So I think my earliest experiences are mixed emotions of devastation, frustration, but also just like falling in love with just the diversity of different people and the way they see the world. So.
At Spokane Treatment and Recovery Services, we are dedicated to our community. That's why we have a sobering unit that runs 24/7 and is the first step into our detox unit. We are fully staffed around the clock in order to make sure that we can answer any questions over the phone while we serve our clientele. For more information or to call anytime, day or night, you can dial 509-570-7255.
And welcome back. As I mentioned earlier, it's going to be incredibly frustrating and maddening, and it'll bring up a lot of emotions when I talk about the history of disability. So I really wanted to start with something happy. In 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed. So yay, 30 years of the American with Disabilities Act. That's been a very important piece of legislature, helping people with disabilities be a part of society in a lot of different capacities. So I want to start with that good note, is that this will end in a much happier place than it starts out, but just know that there's a very long history of exclusion and segregation and persecution of people with disabilities. So as always, because I think I've started every single history piece with the Greeks and the Romans, we're going to start there again. There was actually no Latin word for disability, and they used the word monstrum, which if you think about like Greek and Latin roots, that's the root of the word monster. It's the same word that they used for mythical monsters, which is exactly. And that word monster was even used to describe people with disabilities until like the 1800s. Like you look at the gravestones of babies who died really young because of disabilities, and it literally says baby monster on gravestones.
Oh my gosh.
So you can see how this attitude has lasted throughout these centuries. I mean, you think that you're free of the history, but no, we need to look at it to understand where we are now and why we're at where we're at now. Most of the time, the Romans, they had a more warlike society, and so there was a lot of need for people who were able-bodied. And so if you had a physical disability that meant that you couldn't be a part of what they thought was productive society, a lot of times you were killed. If you've ever heard the term bedlam, which means chaos, it comes from the first mental hospital. So being mentally ill, you don't want chaos. You want structure. You want order. You want to be cared for. And then you get sent to this hospital in 1403 that's supposed to help you and cure you. No, the hospital inventory included chains and manacles, and they thought that corporal punishment would help cure you of your mental illness. And that like Bedlam Hospital is notorious in pop culture today. Like Sweeney Todd, the musical, has references to Bedlam, and people were put there as a punishment because they didn't want to conform to society. It was awful. And people used mental illness as an excuse to persecute a lot of people who didn't conform to, you know, the perception or the norm. As the Industrial Revolution really started to take hold, it became a lot more common to see disabilities. We also started to develop a lot more technology for warfare as well. So you saw a lot of disabilities caused by war, or you'd have disabilities caused by poor working conditions. I always like to say that the reason we follow OSHA laws and OSHA regulations so closely is because they're literally written in blood. You know, you think about where you store chemicals, the reason why you store chemicals in a certain way, according to OSHA, is because someone has been either severely injured or because someone has died due to poor working conditions. People at this time were also publicly mocked. Like, you had veterans of wars defending their countries who were publicly mocked for their disabilities. And there were also very few jobs. And so if you had a disability where you couldn't work, oftentimes you died or you were put in a poorhouse. So again, not a very good system put in place for people with disabilities and accommodating for them. In the 1900s, people with disabilities started to be able to take a lot more agency in advocacy. And this is, I think, a lot more what I want to focus on. We're going to fast forward through the 1930s. Yes, we had FDR as this icon. FDR, if you don't know, had partial paralysis due to polio that he had as a child. And so a lot of people, especially in the United States, looked at him as an inspiration, because he was able to be so successful despite his disability. But then at the same time, you also had the Holocaust, where Hitler and the Third Reich not only were persecuting people who were Jewish at that time, but they also did horrible, horrible things to people with disabilities. But I don't want to touch on that too much. What I really want to end on is in 1977, this is the coolest thing, I think. So this, if you've ever heard of this, this is called the 504 sit-in. And during this time in San Francisco, people with disabilities had advocated for a really long time, and they had gained a lot of support for reforms that would help them be more successful in society. Those are things like curb cuts, making sure that they can use the sidewalks and get off the sidewalk safely, having ramps in federal buildings and things like that. And I think it was around 500 people, over 500 people with disabilities went down to the San Francisco federal building, and they went to several different buildings and they occupied these buildings for days on end, refusing to be pushed aside, refusing to not be heard, refusing to accept, oh, we need to do more research on these regulations. They said, we need these now, and you're going to give it to us because you've pushed us aside for too long. And so we have people like Kitty Cohn, who has muscular dystrophy, and people like Judith Heumann, I apologize if I don't get her name right, who served for 7 years under Barack Obama as a special advisor for the International Disability Rights panel. I mean, we have a lot of regulations and laws that came about as a result of those protests. And I think it's really important to emphasize how people with disabilities are able to write their own narratives now and able to really... They're able to advocate for themselves and be politically active. And I think that that's what we need to emphasize, is that the limitations are not based on the disability. The limitations are imposed by society.
All right. Well, thank you, Emily. That definitely shed some light. I think I've never really thought of it in historical terms other than Nazis and, that kind of extremist viewpoint. But I think one thing that was most shocking in my research, is that, you know, we think of disability, as a minority group, right? It's disabled peoples. It's a smaller subgroup. At least that's kind of the way that I've always thought about it. And yet, when I was researching, I found that according to the CDC's very disappointingly named Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, 1 in 4 U.S. adults have a disability that impacts major life activities. So that's 61 million Americans. And then a New York Times article put a really good, I think, had a good take on it. They said that at some point in a person's life, they will either have a disability or know someone who has one. So this isn't a minority, right? This is something that will affect every person in their lifetime, and yet it's something that's kind of shoved to the back of social consciousness. Michelle, I really like that your first, awareness of disability was in media, because those stats are even worse. If you think about representation of disabled peoples in media, through TV or social media, whatever's kind of in front of you, there's not a lot of representation. And that's important because if anybody who's in advertising or marketing knows that things that are putting your face a lot more, things that are more familiar to you, you see with higher value. Now, this is not a commercial for Apple, but there is a significance to sheer volume. So the fact of this lack of presence of disabled people in media and pop culture really does add to that diminished value in normalized society. So I actually found some statistics from New York Times on TV shows in the U.S. With actors who played disabilities, and across the board in 2016, actors with disabilities represented 5% of appearances on TV, and in 2018, I guess you could see this as a positive, that rose to 12%, but still most of the portrayals were negative. So not exactly promoting this large group of society that, it's not necessarily, even in the word, it's inherently negative, right? A disability, it's something that you're lacking, something that you don't have. And that just aids to this, this segregation that we then have. And I actually found another article that canvassed 31 TV programs that have disabilities, portrayed through their characters. And across this, it amounted to a mere 4 people. and this represented 2% of the total people in the shows. So again, just a complete lack of awareness. And then again, moreover, the people who presented with disabilities, a whopping 95% were played by able-bodied actors. So I mean, those opportunities really aren't there, and light is not being shed. And this isn't just in the media world. It's not just, in TV shows and what's on our social media feeds. It's actually in sociology as a whole. It's been an underrepresented area of study. It was mainly focused on as a measurement of impairment, as a chronic illness, rather than this experience of people as they perceive themselves. So the research is largely being done by able-bodied people who are looking at it from a clinical or medical standpoint rather than a social construct or how it fits into normalized society. And really it wasn't sociologists, it wasn't scientists, it wasn't media that brought light to this large group of people that, as we can see, the numbers say it affects every single one of us. It was actually the International Disabled Peoples Movement that brought awareness and attention to the experiences of this very, very large dominating group of people. And it was from this movement that disability was no longer considered simply a medical problem affecting a minority population, but increasingly perceived as one of the major sociological and political phenomena of our time, with implications on society as a whole. When we see what's happening nowadays, Emily, you kind of touched on this with COVID. We've all had to drastically alter the way that we do our lives, for, lack of a more eloquent way of saying it. But, instead of going to work, we do Zoom meetings, and same goes for school. And even, with our social engagements, this huge piece to our normal everyday lives was taken. But with that, it became an opportunity, really, because now we have people, who would not otherwise have access to these, you know, to certain things like school and work, if they're, you know, have different disabilities, and now they can come in through virtual routes that are being normalized by necessity. And so this has actually benefit a large group of people. You know, we can see that people are able to work full time from home and be just as, if not more productive than they are when they actually come into a physical workspace. And so this does open up a lot of opportunities for the future. And so we can see how altering our perceptions of the, you could call it the burden of changing our societal norms for what we would think of as a minority group, but really isn't, and actually benefits society as a whole. And I was actually thinking a lot about this, Emily, again, you touched on this with children in school who, you know, that with individualized learning plans, and made me think of how I used to be a paraprofessional when I lived in Colorado, and I worked with kids with behavioral and emotional disorders. And so it was, you know, we followed individualized learning programs, but we were able to be one-on-one with these students day in and day out and really give them the attention that they needed. And those kids actually found a really high success rate. Versus now living in Spokane, I actually had a colleague who was asking me about the para program because she has a child who has some behavioral disorders and is really needing some extra help in school. And I talked to her about the para program and told her to, you know, inquire to her school. And she and I actually did some research and I spoke with the principal at her school. And it turns out that they do not have anything like that in Spokane whatsoever. So that wasn't an option, you know? And so, I mean, thinking about how making these kind of drastic social changes, how they can benefit society as a whole, you know, if we were able to normalize this para program, and really even substituting, this has been a hot topic in, you know, the past few months, especially this year, but of, replacing, professionals like safety officers, or even, you know, some schools have police in them, with counselors and people who are, you know, equipped to work with mental health, and, you know, these trained professionals who can give students the attention that they need to address these specific, you know, struggles that they're having, conforming to this rigid idea of what society, you know, or how these rules dictate society. And how that can be beneficial for everyone, but not just, you know, people who we would identify as having disabilities. So these are all, you know, things to think about. And I think the biggest takeaway is something that Candace really touched on in her story, but is this label of being disabled, when that's such a wide spectrum of things. And as we, you know, can see that it really does affect each and every one of us, whether directly or indirectly. And just changing the perception on the burden versus opportunity that's to be had there.
Thank you so much, Monica. The piece you really hit on around how increasing accessibility for folks with various needs actually has the opportunity to benefit society as a whole, that, you know, when we look at universal design and we look at policy changes around curb cutouts that Monica mentioned, and how that increases accessibility to folks that utilize a wheelchair, but also everyone, you know, quite, you know, essentially uses curb cuts, you know, women that are using strollers, or anyone that's using a stroller, and skateboarders and bikes, and curb cutouts have benefited society as a whole. Additionally, when we think about teaching or training, and we take into mind different modes of communication, this not only affects people who might have disabilities, but it also supports the overall learning of everyone in the room. And so I think the opportunity here is to re-examine how society constructs the idea of disability, and an opportunity to examine ableism and how pervasive ableism is in our society. And really the process of, and Emily, you really touched on this, the process of deciding both implicitly and explicitly whose bodies and whose needs are valued or valuable. And also, quite honestly, as you mentioned, Emily, in this, the sad history of also whose bodies are disposable or deemed less worthy, and how pervasive that idea is. And I think also the opportunity there in looking at ableism is the opportunity to also look at the intersections of racism and classism, and how these intersecting forms of oppression work to oppress huge groups in our society that we deemed minority groups, but as Monica named, are more just minoritized groups. That whose needs are diminished, whose needs are often decentered or not centered and seen as inconvenient, as opposed to an opportunity to really be more liberating as a society. And so I get really excited thinking about the opportunity to unlearn some of these toxic dynamics and to embrace disability justice. And so Emily and Monica both talked about the disability rights movement, but there's also a new resurgence of the movement that held some very specific tenets around disability justice. And these 10 principles are around intersectionality. They're very specific about leadership of those most impacted. They also really promote an anti-capitalistic politic, a commitment to cross-movement organizing, recognizing wholeness, sustainability, commitment to cross-disability solidarity, interdependence, and collective access and collective liberation. And so some of my favorite folks to follow on social media, and we'll make sure we include these in the show notes, but these are some folks that I follow on Instagram. The Body is Not an Apology, Disability as Visibility with Alice Wong, Sins Invalid, and a handful of others that are just phenomenal if you want to know more about disability, disability justice, understanding how ableism operates, and just to be a better ally. And so with that, I am going to take us to a commercial break. And when we're done, Emily will bring us back together. Have you ever been curious about what makes a good leader? Or considered running or starting your own nonprofit organization? Whitworth University's Graduate Studies in Education, Administrative and Nonprofit Leadership Program was designed for leaders ready to make a lasting impact in their communities. If you've ever thought about leadership or have aspirations of better serving your community, do us a favor and check us out online at whitworth.edu/GSE.
Welcome back from that commercial. Just to kind of end things, we're going to take a brief look at where we are today with some anthropological look at some different cultures surrounding disability. One of the most important cultures that I want to touch on is the culture is deaf culture, which is really, really interesting. I need to learn more about it because I'm not a part of that community. And I just want everyone to know I'm speaking as an outsider here and acknowledge that I may get something wrong and I apologize in advance. So deaf culture is very, very strong. It's been very strong in the United States for quite a while, and it's a like subculture of American culture. So the values are different than American culture. There's an emphasis on saying exactly what you mean. So I know in my speech, I use like sarcasm. I may like tell my friend, "Oh my gosh, you're so stupid." But again, it's just playing. It's just sarcasm. A lot of times in deaf culture, you would never do that. It's considered very taboo. In addition, it's a very close-knit community. And there is a lot of empowerment of other people and things like that. But, you know, just like any culture, it's not a monolith culture. Not everyone believes the same thing. Not everyone behaves the same way. And so there are like two sides to like cochlear implants that can allow people who are born deaf to hear. And some people who are deaf see this as a really awesome thing because it's allowing people to access sound. But at the same time, there are other people who think that having these cochlear implants will decrease the prevalence of deaf culture and will essentially kill it. And it's there's a lot of going back and forth in a lot of different disability communities with these same issues as well. Do we want to provide a cure for something that isn't necessarily limiting to people? Some autism groups are advocating for more research into what causes autism because they want to decrease the prevalence in children who were born with it. But at the same time, you know, having autism is not a limitation on people in society. It's the society that's putting the limitations on those people. And, you know, Michaela, you would have never have made that beautiful connection with your friend if some of these groups had succeeded in their goals of reducing autism prevalence in children, right? And so I think that we're going to see a lot of change in a lot of these groups moving forward, not so much emphasis on how do we cure the disability, but how can we change society so society is more welcoming to these diverse peoples. And one thing that I want to touch on, I mentioned this earlier, is that we are really, every single one of us, one accident away or one event away from needing the accommodations of someone who has a disability right now. You think about, you know, these war injuries in the 1700s and 1800s or OSHA violations that have caused people to have injuries and things like that. Those are outside of their control. Those are accidents that happen. People are not born that way. It's something that has happened to them. I could have an accident tomorrow that causes me to lose my hearing, and I would need the same access points that Candace needs now. And you know, with COVID, there are people with disabilities who have wanted and needed to work from home. And we're seeing now that was possible all along when people who've needed it have been said, no, you can't work from home for a very, very long time. And so making sure that we have these access points only makes society better. It only makes it easier for people. The same person who is working from home because they have endometriosis, or the same person who's working at home because they have specific medical needs, is the same person who may be working from home because their child is sick that day and can't go to school. You know, so what benefits one person in society benefits really everyone in society. We just need to, I think, become more aware of where those intersections of access happen. So, and Michaela, you touched on this too, you know, with the curb cutting and everything. And I'm hoping that this will change for the better moving forward. And now that we have really dive deep into the identity and the beliefs surrounding ability and disability, we are super excited to announce our next episode will be all about race, which is also an intersection. And I'll talk more next week about how race relates to ability, because there's some really, and coming from the education world, for a long time there was an overdiagnosis of children of color with learning disabilities. And so I'll talk a little more about that next week, but just know that there's definitely a lot of intersection with these identities. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Decon 101. Please feel free to subscribe to our podcast and share it with your friends. We know that we love to reach diverse peoples and differing identities, and let us know if you have any feedback. Have a good evening.
Still looking for a holiday gift or two for the special people in your life? CKUT has new merch, including hoodies and t-shirts, that showcase classic designs dug up from our art attic. Head to ckut.ca to discover our new merch store and find out more about sizing and shipping. Happy holidays from all of us at CKUT.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQUT 90.3 FM. You're just listening to Dorian by Men I Trust, followed by Sour Bell by MJ Guider. And that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special presentation of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, you can check out our Twitter at AvalancheCQUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKT possible. If you'd like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, you can contact us at The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or news at CKUT.ca. Stay tuned for her site. That's up next.